From the Moon Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn. On today's show, what can Spotify and Apple learn from China's music streaming platforms? And does it involve tipping? And director Sebastian Lelio didn't plan to remake his Chilean movie Gloria, but then he met actress Julianne Moore, and together they made a nearly shot-by-shot English version called Gloria Bell.
She said, you know what, I'm terrified, but I would only do it if you direct it. And then I heard myself saying, I would only direct it if you're in it. And that was it.
And the band Y La Bamba celebrate women on their new album, Mujeres. All that coming up on The Frame. Welcome to The Frame. I'm John Horn. We've talked a lot on this show about how the recording industry has changed due to streaming platforms like Spotify and Apple Music. But today we're going to be discussing a couple of streaming platforms you probably never heard of, Tencent Music and NetEase. Both are Chinese platforms, which cater mostly to domestic artists. But unlike Spotify, both have managed to turn a profit, even in a country where music piracy has been rampant for years. To find out more, I spoke with Sherry Hu. She's a freelance music and technology writer for outlets like Billboard and Forbes. And when I reached her by Skype today, we began with what makes the Chinese music industry different.
I think one really interesting aspect of the Chinese music industry that differentiates it from what's going on in most Western markets, and maybe even some other markets in Asia as well, is that there's really a holistic view of celebrities and of celebrity culture in China, meaning that if you're one of the biggest singers or music celebrities in China, you're also very likely a really big actor, and you're also very likely pursuing a lot of deals with fashion brands and other similar companies.
And if I were to go to China and listen to music, what would I see that's different from the United States? Is there broadcast radio, terrestrial radio, record stores? How is the market fundamentally different from what people here might be used to?
I do think broadcast and TV still play such an important role, like singing contests, rapping contests. There's this one show called Rap of China. A lot of people treat that as a gateway from the artist perspective into the major corporate hip hop world in China. In terms of the physical market, I actually don't think CDs and vinyl records are really increasing in China at all. For sure, the dominant mode of music consumption is still streaming, and most of that is happening for free. But one thing that is also different is that if you look at a given streaming service in China and how people consume music, I think it is much more multimedia by default within a singular platform. So if you think about the average US music streaming consumer, you might discover a song on Spotify, and then you'd have to go to YouTube to watch the music video. Whereas on some of the biggest services in China, like QQ Music, you have audio and video more fully integrated. And it's also much more social experience, such that you can comment on videos and songs and share them with your friends a lot more easily through the same platform.
You reported that China's recorded music industry is growing really quickly, but it's still relatively small. And if you look at the per capita spending, it's only like 20 cents per person per year. Is that because so much of the streaming is free? Is that because there's so much piracy, a combination of those factors? If it were totally legitimate and people were paying for what they're listening to, how big could it possibly be?
I'm not sure if there are any official numbers published on this, but if you ask anyone who was active in the Chinese music industry in like the early 2000s, like around 2005, they would say that digital music consumption was essentially 99%. Pirated. And you would have situations where these platforms and companies that are quite big are actually just sourcing their music from what were called like cloud locker files. So essentially like MP3 files that were stored in the cloud somewhere and then downloaded onto their platform, regardless of having any kind of official license from the major labels. And it's only within the last, not even 5 years, I would say just like 2-3 years, that major labels are now pursuing official licenses, and in many cases, exclusive licenses with the likes of Tencent Music and NetEase Cloud Music as well, which are the two biggest platforms in the country. And so I think now that we have that infrastructure in place, I think the industry will grow a lot more quickly.
The other thing that you point out is that there are streaming platforms like NetEase and Tencent that are actually signing artists the way a record label would. Is that part of the trend there, that a lot of artists in China are bypassing what we would consider to be the traditional model, where you sign to a label, label releases your music, and then a streaming service picks it up?
Yes, definitely. And this is so interesting because not just in China, in India, you see one of the biggest streaming services in India called Saavn also running their own essentially artist management and music marketing company already, in addition to a streaming platform and a distribution platform. And there's been mostly a positive reaction. And I think that this, the same is happening in China. Yeah, NetEase, Cloud Music is signing a lot of direct deals, both with local and with international artists. And I think there's this realization that these platforms not only have a lot more reach just by nature, but also they have the digital marketing expertise and the ability to move really quickly and dynamically that traditional labels might not have.
I'd like you to explain the idea of tipping and why that's important to streaming music in China, and whether or not Western music companies could emulate that behavior.
Yes, definitely. So let's take Tencent Music as an example. According to their most recent financial report, I think the filing that they put out ahead of their IPO launch last December, they revealed that they made over 70% of their revenue, not from audio streaming, but from tipping, as low as maybe even a couple of cents. So it didn't have to be these large donations, but just sending money to creators who they wanted to support or for users who they wanted to support. And you see this kind of tipping and micropayment dynamic, not just in a live streaming environment, but even in a downloading environment. I think part of it is distinct to China, but I think what other Western music streaming platforms can learn is that there's a much wider diversity of people's willingness to pay for music and to support their artists than just the $9.99 a month that I feel like a lot of us are being funneled into.
Sherry Hu is a freelance music and tech writer. She writes for publications including Billboard and Forbes. Sherry, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Coming up on The Frame, how Julianne Moore convinced Sebastian Lelio to remake his 2013 Chilean film and put her at the center of it. Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Coming up later this week on the show, Captain Marvel composer Pinar Toprak walks us through how she came up with the music for Marvel's latest superhero film. But now, a movie where the lead isn't a superhero. She's not even anything that extraordinary, which is part of her and the film's charm. She's Gloria Bell, and she's played by Julianne Moore. In this clip, she talks with her mother, played by Holland Taylor.
You're going to wake up one morning and you find yourself a wrinkled old lady just like me.
You're not old. You look beautiful. You do. You really do.
Because life just goes by in a flash. Like that.
I know. You tell me the same thing every 10 years.
See what I mean?
Gloria Bell is directed and co-written by the Chilean filmmaker Sebastian Lelio. It's a remake of his 2013 movie Gloria, which starred Paulina Garcia. In many scenes, Gloria Bell is a shot-by-shot copy of the original Gloria. Both films are about a divorced woman who spends a fair amount of time in clubs where she really likes to dance, and she's especially fond of 1970s and 80s disco. Everybody should know that's Gloria Gaynor. I Never Could Say Goodbye. And this song really, I think, sets the mood for your film. How early do you start thinking about music in your film, and why was this the perfect song to start this story with?
Well, I really love music in film, you know, and I love using songs, and it's the thing that I probably, one of the things I enjoy the most. And Gloria Bell is, in a certain way, is kind of like a hidden musical. It's a film that's filled with music, and the music plays a role that is not too far away from the role that songs play in musical films. You know, they are somehow a commentary on the characters' processes or journeys. And this song, well, we tried different songs to open the film, but this song, I Never Can Say Goodbye, has something so inviting it feels like an opening, and at the same time the lyrics, again, they are, you know, at the very beginning already saying something about the character and the journey that she will live.
When you go back and essentially do a very close follow-up to the original film, do you have a new way of looking at the film? Even if a lot of the shots are very similar, does the film change in your mind as you've grown older and as you are re-examining the character through a different actor's eyes?
Mm. The game of the film is to turn a secondary character into an absolute protagonist. So Gloria, as a character, shouldn't deserve a film, so to say. You know what I mean? In a normal film, she would be the mother or the wife or the auntie that says, you know, please put your seatbelt on and take care. And then the movie would go with the son or with the husband. But in this case, the film stays with her. It's a very strong portrait. And we see Gloria from every possible angle. And we see her going through the entire emotional spectrum. So the first film was a lot about what Paulina Garcia, the wonderful actress that interpreted Gloria, was doing. I have always been very interested in grasping something with the camera that has to do with the intersection between the character and the actor or actress that is interpreting it. In this new version, it's all about Julianne Moore.
Some days I'm happy. Some days I'm not.
Like everyone.
Since the portrait is so deep and it never gives her kind of, so to say, like room to breathe. You know, we're always following her. She's always framed. If you change the actress, if you change the woman that is at the center, somehow the soul of the film, it's modified.
When we see a character like Gloria in an American film, typically her loneliness and her isolation is a flaw that has to be fixed, that there is something missing in her life that needs to be addressed. You have a different approach, that Gloria's loneliness, she's not desperate to solve it. It is who she is, and she understands it, but it's not something that has to be overcome. It's part of her identity. And that seems like a very important choice for you to make, because there's so many other people who would tell that story and show that character in a very different light.
Well, yeah, I mean, I understand that there is a prejudice against loneliness in a society that is obsessed with marriage, you know, as well as there is a prejudice against age or aging in a youth-oriented, obsessed society. And in this case, the film deals with both subjects. There is a certain attitude that the film has towards its character that is more or less kind of like a love letter to her. And I tend to admire Gloria's attitude towards life. She's always, again, you know, willing to live and to dance, and to, she's eager for life, and I think that doesn't have necessarily too much to do with finding love, but loving herself.
I want to play a scene from the movie. This comes at a dinner party where Gloria has introduced a friend of hers, played by John Turturro, and it's a slightly awkward meal. Let's hear a little bit of this scene.
Are you a grandfather?
No.
And they aren't married?
No, they're single, very single.
What do they do?
You mean at this particular moment? Nothing. They're doing nothing.
No, but one of them just had a meeting with a friend who owns a pet store, and that went very well, didn't it?
Yep, did, yep.
And it has the potential to be very lucrative. People love their pets.
What part of town are they in?
There is such commonplace conversation in this film that it is striking, because these are ordinary people having ordinary conversations about ordinary issues. There's nothing heightened about it. And I think that's where the film is the most accessible, that these feel like people that you could have been at that dinner. You could have been rubbing shoulders with these people. They could be people out of your own life. They're not superheroes. They're not extraordinary people. They're defined by, in many ways, for the best way, their ordinariness.
Yes, I think we, as spectators, we feel invited to, you know, to these rooms, to these tables, to these dinners. We feel welcome. And that's what's part of the idea. There is this tendency to make films about great personalities or historical figures or superheroes. But there is heroism in daily life.
We're talking with Sebastian Lelio about his new film, Gloria Bell. There is a long history of American companies remaking foreign language films. And often the American films try to recreate or reinvent the original film rather than honor it. So when you are thinking about the difference between recreating and honoring, you chose to honor as opposed to change. Mm. Why was that important to you?
Well, thank you, because it's the first time I hear it put in those terms. And it's really, it really expresses what I tried to do. I have to be honest, some companies bought the rights and had the rights for a while, and they wanted to do a remake, and I was offered to direct the remake a couple of times, and I always said no, because I was, well, busy doing my other films. But then Julianne Moore became part of the equation. And she
approached you, right?
Well, it was a bit of a kind of like a funny misunderstanding.
Hey, what was the story?
Because I was informed by my team that Julianne Moore had seen the original film, loved it, but wasn't necessarily interested in remaking it.
Okay.
But they said to me, "But she wants to meet you, and she wants to know you and have a coffee with you." So I was very honored, and I went to see her, and we met, and she talked like for an hour passionately about the film and about Gloria, and I was very touched by her understanding of the character and of its resonances. So towards the end of the meeting, I said, "Well, thank you very much. It's been really an honor to meet you, and I totally get it if you don't want to do a remake." And she said, "Wait, what are you saying?" She said, "You know what? I'm terrified, but I would only do it if you directed." And then I said, or I heard myself saying, "I would only direct it if you're in it." And that was it. And that's how organically it was born. The fact that I am the one, you know, remaking my own film. When the original film came out, I feel that maybe it was a little bit ahead of its time in terms of putting women at the absolute center. And I think that this new version is somehow right in its time. It's very timely. So and things changed in America. So suddenly the story of a woman that claims her right to be seen and to be heard and to be respected and to be loved became urgent again.
Shocking that would suddenly be urgent and not always so. But yes, you are right. Sebastian Lelio is the writer and director of Gloria Bell. Sebastian, thanks for coming in. Great to see you.
Thank you so much.
Gloria Bell opens in theaters on March 8th. Coming up on The Frame, we visit with the indie band Y La Bamba, which weaves Latin rhythms and electronica and took its name from the lead singer's cat.
You've seen the movie San Andreas, right?
Natalie, I'm gonna need you to stay calm, honey.
I've got some bad news for you. When the big one hits, the rock won't save you. Want to know how to get ready for the next major quake? I'm Jacob Margolis, science reporter and host of KPCC's new podcast, The Big One, your survival guide. Prepare yourself. Listen in Apple Podcasts.
Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. The indie rock band Y La Bamba released a new album this month called Mujeres. The Portland-based group is led by Mexican-American singer-songwriter and guitarist Luz Elena Mendoza. When the band came through L.A. on a recent tour, The Frame contributor Beto Arco spoke with Mendoza and her bandmates for this profile.
It's a Saturday night at El Rey Theater in L.A.'s Miracle Mile District. Luz Elena Mendoza and her band Y La Bamba are playing a song from their new album, Mujeres, to a full house. The band's music is a solid blend of indie rock, electronica, Latin rhythms, and ambient effects. If you weren't familiar with the group, you might not be able to tell that Mendoza is the front woman. She stands off to one side of the stage and shares many of the vocals with the keyboardist. But Mendoza does stand out. She's tall and angular, and her multicolored hair is a modified bowl cut that is long in the back. And when she cuts loose, her voice is at times ethereal, a bit dreamy, yet deeply soulful. Mendoza's parents migrated from Mexico's state of Michoacán to Redwood City in the Bay Area. After Mendoza was born, her parents moved the family to Medford in southern Oregon. She began writing songs in English and Spanish, and at age 25, she moved to Portland. Mendoza says writing songs in both languages has been a natural experience, like a plant growing.
I don't know. It's like there's no way I can forget my culture. It's just there. I contemplate with it constantly. So it's very beautiful to see how I've just kind of evolved and continue to evolve. Como esa planta que piensas que ahí así se va a quedar, pero when you heal and you move through things, you grow and you evolve. Sola, sola se me despido. ¿De qué le importa si me voy? ¿De qué le importa si me vaya si me retiro?
Mendoza says everything that she heard growing up, from the cumbias of Rigo Tobar to the rancheras of Chavela Vargas, plus the music scene in Portland, has helped her to become who she is today.
I just write music. I don't ever think about like a sound or a genre or whatever, you know? Like I just kind of do it, whatever happens. And like I definitely have to connect with the heart. If the heart's not behind like the expression, you know, then I'm like, I can feel it intuitively. I'm not interested in it.
Ryan Oxford is the band's lead guitarist. He's been with Illa Bamba for 2 years. The new album was recorded in his studio in Portland. Oxford says he was impressed with Mendoza's talent from the first time they met.
Yeah, I think she just has a limitless imagination. Just has so many ideas all the time in her head. Yeah, it's incredible.
When asked if the songs on Mujeres were inspired by the recent empowerment of women and the Me Too movement, Mendoza says the subject is nothing new to her.
I feel like it's just intuitive. I've always felt this way. I've always felt like this confusion about like why feeling like this thing that you and like the female has inherited, like feeling less than, you know, it's really like hard. And then you get used to it, you know, especially like just growing up seeing how like some women were getting treated and it's just normalized.
Mendoza says there's something special about being able to express your feelings through music.
And then through sound, there's a word, and there's una letra, you know, there's like a message. And for me, it's always been like a catharsis. And I feel very grateful and privileged that I get to like share that with people. And like, I'm basically just talking about how I'm coming to terms with like my boundaries, you know, with like patriarchy and misogyny and wanting to protect my mom and all of us, all women.
Illa Bamba also includes bass player Grace Bugby and drummer Miguel Jimenez Cruz. Julia Andrea Mendiolea is the band's keyboard player and also sings background vocals. She listened to Illa Bamba for many years before recently joining the band. She says she identifies with the songs on the new album.
It really touches a lot of personal things about growing up Mexican-American and kind of all the different things that can even mean. And, you know, it's titled Mujeres, so a lot of things about being a woman that I think a lot of people that don't have that specific experience understand. And I just love the way that the music is super personal, like playing it. It felt really easy to learn all the songs because I felt personally, emotionally invested.
Lucelena Mendoza has a clear understanding of her role as an artist. For her, playing and touring with her musician friends comes with a responsibility.
It's like a form of activism, and I really hope that like while I'm here, you know, and like doing what I'm doing and sharing it in this way, like I can continue to make a difference, and I hope that like I can continue to cultivate family and protect my family during these hard times.
As for the band's odd name, Mendoza recalls when she started uploading music on a long-forgotten social network more than 10 years ago.
I came up with that name because I had a cat named Bamba, and I got her when I was living in Ashland, like a month before I moved to Portland, Oregon. And when I started to put my songs on MySpace, I needed like a band name, you know? And I was like, what can my band be called? But I was like, Y La Bamba. I didn't want to put my name before it.
The band's name became the symbol of moving to the big city to start her career at age 25, Luz Elena Mendoza and her cat, Y La Bamba. For The Frame, I'm Beto Arcos.
And that's our show for today. If you missed any part of this show or want to hear more, you can always get The Frame podcast. It's available wherever you like to listen. I'm John Horn. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back here tomorrow.